Cape Talk. The European Report with Katie McDonald.
Katie McDonald, all the way from Budapest, Hungary. A very good morning to you, Katie. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, incredibly well, incredibly well. And you?
Oh, Katie, you know what? Because the church is now where you can literally openly drink. I think we live in interesting times. That's all I'm going to say. Living in interesting times. Oh, my, my. Nonetheless, let's talk about Jerusalem and Israel.
Yes, 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 yes. Well, the European reaction in particular. It's been quite an interesting day or couple of days. As you'd well know, Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli leader, touched down in Europe over the weekend with, it seemed, quite grand expectations that the Europeans would follow the lead of Donald Trump with regards to Jerusalem and, declaring it their capital and moving embassies there. Anyway, his first stop was Paris, greeted by protesters. Lots and lots of pro-Palestinian protesters were out there. And he met with Emmanuel Macron, who essentially told Netanyahu that France was against the move. And he urged the Israeli PM to move rather towards peace with Palestinians. So it was a bit of a big no and a block. And then Netanyahu was in Brussels yesterday. Yesterday morning, he had a meeting with the European Union foreign ministers. Again, activists protesting on the streets. And the collective reply of the European Union essentially was a big no, a resounding no, to acknowledging or, accepting Jerusalem as the capital. What they have said, though, Abs, is that they have the full support of the EU with regards to the two-state solution, which has been, on the cards among some negotiators, as we well know for some time. So what the European Union is saying is that to see Jerusalem as a capital, it would be, for them, the capital of Palestine and Israel. So essentially, they're following international consensus. And Netanyahu did not get the support that I think he was hoping to get.
Interesting how Donald Trump is doing things. But I suppose he says to himself, maybe I might just be here for 4 years, so might as well do how I feel, and then I'll only be judged after the 4 years. Nonetheless, what's the latest coming out of Poland?
Well, look, I thought this was quite interesting. I might kind of bring a few bells with you, but essentially, the big question is the government trying to muzzle free media in Poland? There's a leading news broadcaster, TVN24, in Poland. It's actually a privately owned broadcaster, in fact, by a big American group, I'm pretty sure. And they've just been given a huge fine by the government over their coverage of protests in the Polish parliament. These happened last year. At the end of last year, they've been fined the equivalent of around 5.6 million rand. And the Polish media watchdog said in a statement that they issued yesterday that by covering the protests, they infringed the law by, quote, promoting illegal activities and encouraging behavior that threatens security, unquote. So essentially, they're saying that this news station, this broadcaster, by covering parliament protests or protests in parliament, they were breaking the law. And it's not to, they fined them, it's not to happen. Then interestingly enough, a human rights lawyer with a big group over here, the Helsinki Foundation for Human Rights, commented on the consequences of reporting on, or the negative consequences of reporting on things such as the parliamentary crisis and the reaction to it. And the quote out of there was, "It may be perceived as a certain warning signal for other media that would like to report independently some events that are uncommon from the point of view of the ruling party." Uncomfortable. So I just thought, it's quite interesting. It might ring some bells, but essentially, they feel that in Poland since 2015, there's been quite a clamp, not just on the media, but also on the court system. So that's ongoing.
You know, I was playing a clip earlier on talking about, you know, private media and maybe media in general. I don't know if you've if you are aware of this whole Steinhoff issue that has gripped the country, where many in South Africa feel that perhaps the media was not as attentive as it should have been on this issue. And so, you know, where it goes. It goes to that whole blue collar, white collar crime, whatever. But also the focus is so much on government that we forget about the private sector. One person arguing that, or some people are arguing that, well, how can the private sector investigate itself? Because if you are a private newspaper or private media company, you are also part of the private mafia. So it's certainly discussions to be had. Yeah, it is. It is interesting discussions, and we must have them at the end of the day. Nonetheless, let's talk about the snow across Europe.
Oh, look, snow, okay? It's not an unusual occurrence in winter. I mean, in a European winter. But, you know, the first heavy snowfalls this year, you know, across parts of Europe, in particular in the UK, and they have caused a huge amount of disruption. You know, for example, British Airways out of Heathrow, they cancelled 170 flights on Sunday, 100 flights yesterday. That was raising questions as to just how prepared are they for winter. I mean, Schiphol Airport in the Netherlands, 400 flights cancelled, 200 flights out of Brussels, Germany as well, Frankfurt Airport, more than 300 flights cancelled on Sunday. You know, reports of car crashes, for example, on the German autobahns, traffic jams, train delays. I mean, it has been havoc, abs, havoc. And, you know, it's one of these things that, you know, if you look at the Nordic countries, flights, they just, in winter, snow, whatever, they go. But they have the equipment to deal with this. You know, they have to, you know, heat the engines and de-ice the planes and things like that. And the cost of having the amount of equipment that they would potentially need in a situation like this at an airport like Heathrow, they say it's prohibitive. So major snowfalls, major disruption.
I was just about to ask, Keiichi, you know, how much more do we want the airports to be prepared? Because I would imagine they're taking all the precautions. But now you've just answered that question in the sense that it's all about money.
Yeah, it's because it's the equipment. I mean, I can remember the first time I flew years ago up north in a snowstorm. I couldn't believe the plane took off, but it was in a country where they are used to that kind of weather and they have to have the equipment. Otherwise, you know, you don't get anywhere. But it's been pretty hectic. And it's interesting to have these weather patterns. You know, we speak about it often because Britain's supposedly experiencing what would be their coldest night tonight or last night or, you know, overnight, whereas we are going to have a high of 13 degrees tomorrow.
Just talking about those planes, Katie, before I say goodbye to you, have you ever landed in Port Elizabeth when it's windy?
It's got to be one of the most frightening experiences.
I know. You start speaking to your ancestors and you're calling whatever god that's closest to you at the time. Be like, anyone that's available, come in now. Nonetheless, Katie, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and hopefully you'll have a wonderful snowy day.
Oh, well, sunny day I'm hoping for, so I'll report back to you on Thursday.
Sure. Thank you so much. Katie McDonald, all the way from Budapest, Hungary.